She was good. You know, it's funny. Like, I remember, like, there was like everyone was talking about the Judith video, like where she like puts her
It's
hair
an
into like
amazing
a,
moment. I
and
love
everyone's just like, that's pretty badass.
it. It is, man. It's cool as fuck.
Oh my God.
Where was this when you were being so judgmental?
Welcome to Know Your Rights, a music podcast from two guys who know just enough about songwriting to start a podcast about.
Follow Rob
and Colton
as each week we dive into a different band or songwriter and discuss what makes them great,
okay, or otherwise.
Music is law,
and we know our rights. Hello, everybody.
Yes, here
welcome.
We are. Episode 4.
Is it episode 4?
We're episode 4 right now.
That's a lot of it. That's more than I ever thought we would get to. It's amazing.
It's one shy of what I thought we'd get to. So we got to just kind of push through and then I'll feel.
So welcome to the penultimate episode.
Yeah, that's right.
Know Your Rights.
Man.
Oh my goodness. How are you doing?
I'm doing fine.
That was it. That's my only interview question.
I know.
We're good. Man.
I can't wait till we have guests. How are you doing? They answer and we go like, all right, well, that was. Blankety blank, piss off. Yeah. We're on to no.
By the way, listeners, if you have any big names that you'd like us to interview, email those names to what is the email again, Rob?
It is know.your.rights, Colton.
WRITES.
There we go. podcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, I always forget that last part. And we'll be sure to likely never get to interview those people.
Yeah.
Unless they're somewhat gettable. Keep them gettable.
Yeah. If you feel like starting a Twitter account and tagging all these different is that tagging's correct for Twitter, right? I've never used Twitter.
I think you do tag on Twitter. We're clearly reaching tons of different fan bases. Our tentacles absolutely. Are everywhere. We have an Instagram.
We do have an Instagram.
I can't find it. I looked for it and I couldn't find it.
I think it's the same title. Oh man, I'll look that up and I'll put it in the show notes.
Listeners, if you can find our Instagram for us and email it to us, we would also appreciate that. Thank you very much.
I think it's fairly deceiving too, because right now it's just like a picture of like a bouquet of flowers.
there's
no indicator that it's actually us.
There's like, if you ever have a whole day to waste, it won't even take the whole day. Just try to find all the different social media profiles that Rob and I have made for one-off music projects. So we won't name those bands,
no.
but they're out there. We didn't even really record music. I think you probably would upload like a track or two for each of them.
Yeah.
Who knows how many we've put up over time.
I would be very intrigued to hear what tracks I put up.
I
can almost guarantee I don't have it. So it's not going to come around. I don't think that's going to circulate into our lives, but I would love for it to find its way to me. But it's like MySpace. Didn't MySpace, like, they just cut all the music that was on there?
I hope they did, because I know I still had MySpace profiles up for the three stuff by things I think I still had. And the whole time I was thinking, just explode. Just go away. I don't want you anymore.
Yeah, that brings me back to when in my friend Sam, Colton and I's old band, our original second band, technically. But I remember Tom, our bass player, he went to show his family songs that we had on there. And I was so ashamed of my voice on what he thought was still up there that I made these really, really crummy at-home recordings and put those up instead. And he showed it to his family. And it's just like, you know, I was showing my family so they can hear me play bass. I get that your voice was not there.
This is mean, but I think it's just funny that bass players would play a record for like friends and stuff. Be like, do you hear me? Do you hear
that bass? Oh, that bass is really popping. It's like, no, man, I hear the guitar. I hear the vocals.
I hear that the song has depth to it. Thank you for that song. Yeah. That's by the way, for everyone who's ever played bass for us, we love you, including you, Rob. You played bass a couple times.
Yeah. I think I'm the one who like I go way further than everybody else on bass drum. I'm like, no, that's not it. For the most part, our music, it's just like, dude, if you stick to the root notes and add a passing note here and there, you got it.
Oh man. You know, I mentioned this to you before we started recording. Mm-hmm. I finished a book that I was reading and it was,
I thought you were going to say you were writing.
I that's a whole other barrel, but all it's right. Actually, it's somewhat related. This is a book by Andy Marino and it's called It Rides a Pale Horse, which if you're interested, I enjoyed it. It was pretty cool. It's definitely in the horror genre, which I tend to read anyway.
Okay.
And the reason I'm bringing it up is there's going to be slight spoilers, by the way, everyone, for the book. Not too bad, but if you're, maybe skip a minute, who knows, or don't. It's okay.
All right.
There's a bunch of stuff that happens, Rob, but one of the things that there's these two kind of immortal billionaire siblings, brother and sister. And
immortal?
They're immortal. Like, they live for a long period of time.
And they're not vampires?
They're not vampires, which is weird. To be honest, I kind of don't remember why they're immortal. They were basically, they lived a very long time. But okay. The whole thing is they're trying to get all these different artists, right, to create stuff for them because they're trying to basically raise this dead god, very Cthulhu-like mythos.
Okay.
The whole point of it, though, is they kidnap these artists. They lock them into this huge bunker. And they essentially give them all the materials they could ever want to just create. The problem is they can never leave, but they can create art in a vacuum until they die. And that's basically it. They die in pretty horrible ways. But the whole conceit to me that was,
I would imagine there's not very many major scales. That's a lot more minor.
It's pretty wild. And it's like, and it's a pretty wide array of artists that they take. I enjoyed the book a lot, but
that's a fascinating concept. I like it.
That concept got me to think. It's this idea of like, and in the book, at least, that was seen as a selfish act that artists are kind of obsessed with the process of making. And then the sharing aspect is like, you know, just never really of much importance. And the reason I brought it in my head, I was like, that sounds like a dream to me. If I could get locked in a place where it's like, just create, never share with anyone and just write and do the thing you love. That's always been the thing I love the most. And I don't know, is that something you share, Rob?
To an extent, I kind of like writing on my own, at my own whim, as opposed to, you know, actually the artist that we're covering, A Perfect Circle, is today. Yes. I think there's actually a moment in which I kind of feel like they're in that space to where they, it feels like they forced an album, you know, whereas I wouldn't feel as comfortable. I think you would do great in that scenario. I really do. Yeah. But me, I'm also claustrophobic. So I think that would, that would give me some issues, but
I just feel like people are always saying, yeah, I wrote this record for me. Right. And it's hard sometimes. I'm like, when you get to a certain level, how is that possible? It is
impossible. At some point in time, it just becomes, it's the public's. It's no longer yours. Yeah. I hate to quote Jack Black, and I would love to quote Jack Black. I love Jack Black. I would hate to quote Jack White.
What's the shade with Jack Black on this?
Yeah,
podcast,
no, I love Jack Black, but Jack White.
Oh yeah, we got problems.
Yeah, but he did have this. I can't remember exactly what he said, so I'm basically paraphrasing, but it was along the same lines of like, it's no longer yours, and it really never was.
I know that quote. It's when they were talking about the Seven Nation Army, right?
Yeah, yeah, like, well received, at least on my end. Mm-hmm. You know, toward that's where I mean, like, to go back to your is this your thought experiment, by the way?
This is the thought experiment.
Yeah, I would hate it. I'd be spending most of my time down there just going like, how are they immortal? They're not vampires. They don't want my blood, but they just keep living.
The idea, which I kind of loved, is that they're rich, and the one person just says they're super rich, and so they have they just found magic. Like when you get to a certain level of wealth, you just get magic. And I was like, I get that. That makes sense.
I think that's a real thing.
Oh my god. Well.
To all you poor artists that are actually locked in a dungeon to make music for your your billionaire enslavers, freaking, I feel for you. We see you.
You are seen.
And like and share.
And I'm jealous of your situation. That sounds like a dream to me. Rob, what are you listening to this week? Let me know.
All right. This week, podcast, but no, I can't say her first name. At least I don't think I say it right. Is it Tarquin? Is that how you like Tarquin? I would pronounce it Tarquin.
Tarquin.
Yeah, but Tarquin Alexandra. Right, Alexandra or Alexander. Very bubbly. Very bubbly. Kind of actually a little bit of a it's almost like a more in a what's up?
It's Tarquin Alexandra.
Okay, okay. Yeah. It's kind of like it's bubbly, but it's almost a more intellectual Taylor Swift.
I'm down for this. I'm going to listen to something real quick.
Yeah. Yeah, actually if you're going to listen to something really quick, listen to the first, probably the most popular song.
What is it?
It is, I think I had it lined up. Yeah, Symptom song.
All right, listen to it right now. It's on TikTok.
Yeah, and I discovered it through Instagram.
And dizzy and almost always hungry, but I'm nauseous and cautious of standing up too quickly, for my vision is fleeting and so is my stability, both mentally and physically. Hot flashes, cold flashes, can't see without glasses, night sweating,
right?
Sweating, throat tingling, tongue itching, blood pressure changing, and sleep hallucinating, and I'm almost always on the verge of fainting.
Okay, I got it. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's fun. It's perky. It's got that bubbly sensibility to it. But, you know, it's kind of like a women's empowerment mm-hmm. vibe to it. Or, you know, like individual empowerment, you know, it's where it's I think she says in there somewhere where it's, you know, the doctors tell me it's all psychosomatic.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I guess it's not happening. You know, I guess I'm not feeling anything. You know?
Yeah, that's always there's a great online thing where it's like, doctors and films and stuff that are just always like out to like help you do whatever, and then in real life it's like you're probably just making it up.
Yeah.
So
and she's got plenty of stuff. This is apparently how I discover new music, but Instagram just kind of funnels it in some form of an ad, and so she must have put some money into trying to get her voice out there more, and it seems to be working. I think that song on Spotify had, what was it? Yeah, 34,000 listens.
Wow.
I'm jealous. You know,
that's the thing, is the whole time she was playing, I kept thinking, that's like a whole way of discovering music that's like totally weird to me. Like right now, my main way of getting new music is likely YouTube, mm-hmm. like whatever algorithm pops up. But I didn't even recognize that there's like TikTok and Instagram, like whole communities, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's the new way to promote. You know, it's something that it would have been interesting. I've thought about this numerous times to where, like my friend Sam Days, mm-hmm. how would we have utilized TikTok or Instagram? Would not we well. Have? And there's a chance that we just wouldn't have. We would have just been rebellious and like, we don't need that. It's all about.
I think we were rebellious, but we were also pretty confident. I'm going to tell a quick story, listeners. To just give you an idea of what I'm talking
around.
About.
Gather around
for the My Friend Sam Days, everyone. We were playing in a show at probably not either Cedar Center or the Veterans Hall. One of the two key places likely. In yes. Lancaster/Palmdale. And it was a moderately big show. We were excited for it. And I believe we had Tyler Kahn over in the band at that point, as well as Tom.
On keys. We had it. Yep, yep.
And we constructed a really great flyer that had our actual faces on it. We took pictures and put the flyer on there and the place. And had all the bands that were playing with us. And we said, okay, let's go to the mall, which is the hot spot for the youth, as you all know. Let's hand out these flyers. And we spent, and this was the most active we had ever been. And as band members, aside really from the trying, writing we were doing, just really, really
like everybody get out there, come see us.
Going, we met several people, right? A couple of people that are like, yeah, you guys are great. We're going to check you out. And then pretty much after how many hours that we spent handing those things out, and then we get back to my car, and then I think it's Tyler who says, hey, we didn't put the date or the time on this.
I do remember that. Yeah, that is direct relation to how poorly we would be on TikTok or
So my hat's off to Tarquin Alexander for getting herself out there. And it reminds me a lot of like people, like songwriters I used to play with when I would play with like Jesse Williams or stuff.
Well, and unfortunately, listening to the recordings, I think that's where I get the Taylor Swift vibe. Because if you listen further, check out her album. What's it called? I love the title of the album. And I listened to a little bit of it today. But Monsters, what is it? Monsters with Mustaches, which is a great title.
That's pretty good.
Great. Yeah, it's a great title. But so far, just listening, I think I listened to the first four tracks. Mm-hmm. It's more the way the instrumentation, the way it's all, you know, orchestrated. Yeah. That gives it the Taylor Swift vibe. If you follow her on Instagram and you watch just the little like acoustic shorts that she has, that gives it such a cooler vibe to me.
It reminds me a lot of Kimya Dawson, famous film from the Moldy Peaches.
Yeah, I think she has a little bit more of a refined voice compared to Moldy Peaches. For Moldy Peaches, I think that's, I've always just felt like that's just a, like, we just do it. We go into it. We're not trying to be impressive. We're not trying to be impressive musicians. This is how it comes across. But yeah, that's the artist that, you know, Mad Dash last second, realizing that I didn't have a new artist. I didn't do my homework, but you know what? I listened to a lot of it yesterday and today.
Yeah.
And I think
when Alexandra, come on, Know Your Rights.
Yeah. Please. Yeah. Yeah. I think you deserve your day in the sun for sure.
And yeah. In the shade away from the sun significantly. Yeah. You might be able to see the sun from where this podcast is.
Yeah.
We don't know.
Yeah.
But, well,
we're locked down in a basement where we're making a podcast for our immortal masters.
Yeah, that's the thing, is I feel like at this moment as we're recording, I'm like, maybe that's what we're doing.
I think that's kind of the human plight.
And it's really fun. I like it. I'm going to make you so happy with the artist I've been listening to this week. You alluded to this earlier. Yeah, I'm paper grading. When I paper grade, I go into just really deep music holes to put myself in the zone. And the band I found myself in, and I promise you it was by a kind of accident, was Tool.
I thought that was going to be the...
And I said to myself, you know what? I'm 35 years. I'm almost 35. It's my birthday's next week. And so I'll be 35. That's
right. I'm not getting you anything.
That's, you know what? It's respectable. Just get me this podcast.
I expect next month when my birthday comes along, I'm expecting those Amazon gifts coming in from you. I'll give you my address.
Depending on when this episode is out, listeners, our birthdays are not on the dates you think they are. Yeah. So don't worry. But also, I don't want people to know my birthday. So none you beeswax.
did I say my birthday month? I think I said my birthday month.
Now they know. Yeah. The government already knows.
They don't know the day. They got a 1 in 30 chance of guessing it.
It's one of those things where I was like, I'm 35. I looked myself in the mirror. I got a little gray in the beard. I was like, I'll just start liking Tool. I think I get it. Like I never disliked Tool. I think it was just we're going to talk way more about this in a second when we start to talk about Perfect Circle, because I want to hear you. I'm going to give you lots of space to cook.
Don't give me too much space.
You got tons of space.
Still respond, please.
I'm going to create the separation for you. I'm going to run the cuts under the basket, but it's all you, buddy. That's some basketball.
Sounds good. That's right.
I never felt I had the energy to dive into Tool.
And that's like, so weird to me, where I'm like, you need no energy. If you have too much, I think most people who don't listen to Tool are too energetic. They don't have patience. Those are some long songs, man.
But the album I've been listening to is the newest one that they've put out, Fear Inoculum, which I don't know how your feelings are in this, Rob. I know we're going to do a Tool episode in the future, so we can save some of this. But that first track, at least, and the other parts of the record, I was so locked into grading that it just kind of sank into me. And it was kind of perfect for that, like to just kind of have on while I was doing like something that required more critical thinking. But Fear Inoculum, I've heard a few times, that track, and I think it's great.
Cool.
And Rob loves this opinion.
Ooh, man, that album, I waited 13 years.
I waited 0 years.
Yeah, that's where I think it's a little different.
It is.
Don't listen to Fear. And everybody at home, if you've never listened to Tool, please do not start on Fear Inoculum. Please.
listeners, how happy do I sound? I listen to Fear Inoculum. I love, it's just the vibes.
You were already in a miserable place. You were grading papers. That can't be that exciting.
You know what I realized? The more I listen to Tool, this is stupid, but I think, man, like Rob is really influenced by Tool and A Perfect Circle. Like when I like think back to how you write your guitar lights and like the best way possible, like when I listen to older songs that we wrote together, I'm like, yeah, like I hear that in Fear Inoculum. I love the vibe of it.
Oh my God, this was a compliment until you dropped it.
Yes. So listeners, go buy Fear Inoculum. Tell Tool how great it was.
Tarquin Alexandra, everybody, just go with that.
God. I think it didn't used to be, it wasn't supposed to be this way, but I think our recommendations are just contests now between the two of us.
Absolutely.
I started it.
You did start it.
I did start it.
Everybody go listen to Most Def.
But don't listen to Most Def. Jasmine Mira clearly is the one you should listen to. Good Lord.
Go check out Beyonce, everybody. And if you don't get these jokes, go and listen to the last three episodes.
Yeah. And then stop this. Listen to the next last three. 4 days later, you'll get everything we just said.
Yeah.
I think it's time for us to launch into our discussion of A Perfect Circle. How are you feeling?
I feel actually pretty good about it.
You feel okay? You feel prepared?
Yeah, I think you brought up a time frame to where, I mean, I waited 13 years for a new Tool album at one point in time, and I personally was let down by it. Mm-hmm. And I will elaborate further because there's also an A Perfect Circle album that I waited 14 years for, and I felt a little underwhelmed. When it came in,
I felt like last episode we were talking about Vampire Weekend, and I felt very positive the whole episode. I was like in good spirits. Mm-hmm. And I have to say that there's going to be like records and stuff where this episode, the superlatives I'm going to bring out, they still don't feel like enough. Like I texted you, Rob, over the week, and I remember I said, man, when A Perfect Circle is good, they are just so good.
Mm-hmm.
And then when they are bad,
exceptional. It's exceptionally bad. Yes.
And in a way, that's respectable, right? Because the nicest thing, there's lots of nice things, but one of the nicest things I know I can say about them is like, even in their failures, I think it comes from a good place. And that's what I've always appreciated about them.
I do agree with that. There are certain moments to where I feel like there's a little bit of hubris that led it to being almost lazy to me, or there was just kind of this like, of course, I'll go in, I'll get in the vocal booth. Yes, Maynard, I'm talking to you. I'll get in there. It'll be gold. And I can go back to my vineyard and just continue throughout my day. And I don't think he gives he could listen to us berate him. And I don't think he cares. Which, you know,
I don't think he doesn't strike me as someone who is perpetually or at all online and in capacity.
Well, I mean, time to put the Silicon Obsession down.
Don't get me started on that. It's not going to go.
I'm revving the engine, man. I'm turning the ignition. Revved. We're about to start driving down this road.
There's going to be nice things, and I'm going to get those out first because I need to channel it. Even during the week, I would listen to, spoiler alert, the last two of Perfect Circle records, and I would have to stop and re-listen to the first two to remind myself that you this was the same band.
I think we talked about this before, to where we kind of just would sprinkle it in throughout our week. Like, I'll listen to this album, and that's all I need. And then the next day, I'll listen to this album. But when I got to the last two, I'd have to restart. I'm just going to listen beginning to end. I think we had a conversation where it was just like, no, I like that approach. The very next day, I'm going to start with Married the Gnome, which I think I'm getting that right. I think
that sounded right. It sounded very good when you said it.
Thank you, man. And then 13th step, and then Emotive, and then Eat the Elephant. And I can't wait for the category that we both know what we're kind of hinting at, but although, I can't wait for that category.
I'm curious if we're going to be totally in the line.
I want to
ask you something, because this is, I think, the first real episode where we both have guys, right? You already kind of hinted at it. Maynard, as an artist, as a songwriter, is one of your guys.
Well, yeah, well, especially in my younger days, so he was a guiding light, you know.
Yeah, yeah, and Tool is, I know something else. When you heard A Perfect Circle, like, what was it like? What was like the feeling it gave you that Tool didn't? Like, when you first heard like Murder Noms, what was it that separated for you?
I think it was more that Murder Nom, which, by the way, I think there's a play on words there to where I think merde in French is shit. Sure, I think there might have been a play on word, but also Merde de Nom, I believe it means sea of names.
Right.
Yeah. Which I'm like, all right, that's cool. It's a nice little cop out for having to name an album. Right? It's like, okay, sea of names.
All of them.
Yeah, all of them. That's what this, but it came across, what's a word it's androgynous gothic rock to me. And alt rock, you know, but I just, it was weird because, you know, you expect, when it comes to Maynard, I think they phrased it very well to where, or I think Maynard said it to where Tool is very masculine. You know, it's very primal. It's all these, you know, it's guitar, bass, drums, vocals. We're going to come at you with that.
Yeah.
Whereas Merde Nom is a lot more, there's a lot more soundscape. There's a lot more outside sources, a lot more outside sounds or strings. There's, I mean, you listen to a song like Three Libras, and it's just, wow. All right, Maynard, I didn't expect that from you. And it's very personal, and it's just a song style that I just couldn't even, I never could have gotten that into my head unless he had done it.
Yeah. And we keep talking about the difference in how we approach these bands. It's true. Cause I found, really, I listened to both of them for the first time, like simultaneously. It was, I met you, and before you, it was my friend Kyle, our mutual acquaintance, right? He used to be in a band with us. And Kyle was a huge Perfect Circle / Tool guy. And I didn't have the same, I think, introduction to A Perfect Circle that a lot of Tool fans had, where it was this whole different way of interacting with this particular artist, right? With Maynard.
Yeah.
And so I think I didn't appreciate it as much. And Murder Nom still, I'll just go ahead and tell you guys, I don't have that record in any of my categories. And I enjoy that record.
That makes sense, though. I can definitely see where you tore it. For me, it's the top two, you know,
right.
It's the top two. But that album, I think it, I don't know if that really gets its, I don't think it really gets all its due. I think that there's a creative vibe on that album that I think is very special. I think the atmosphere that's set up throughout it. I mean, if you listen to a song like Arrestus, which I have no idea if I'm saying that correctly, but that one, the growth in that song, and you know, a song like Judith, the obvious hit off the album. I think that is just a badass song.
It's really good.
And you know, they walk a fine line between, if you think of the time frame that came out, they walk a very fine line between nu metal, which, if we really have to break down the aughts, that's kind of the stain in music most of the time. There can be good nu metal, but you got to do it right.
I thought you said that's kind of the stain. And listeners, I 100% was singing Stained in my kitchen this morning.
Which
and
is
I had
fine.
The thought, as I was singing Stained, I was like, you know, Break the Cycle.
I enjoyed it. And again, these are also, I think there might be more nostalgia that creates our like, or because I think I brought up a Wonder What's Next, by the way. It took me a whole episode, everybody, but that Chevelle album I was talking about that I would fall asleep to, Wonder What's Next. I'm not going to really recommend that to anybody. Like, you know, I think I was the right age, the right, I don't know, the right energy level to appreciate it.
Well, and they're definitely a band that owes a lot to Tool, right? And
Without a doubt. You know, I didn't even think of that when I was saying that. But yeah, his voice is very inspired by Maynard.
The riffs, for sure. Yeah. I think Murder Nom's, when I listen to it, just like you were saying, I appreciate the density of the sound, right? and like the layering of everything. The guitars are really great. Some of the guitar tones make me kind of nauseous. Like they don't feel really good. They feel sticky. Like, I don't know what
it is. Interesting. Is any particular example you can?
I need to go to my list here for a second.
Yeah, no worries.
Those first three tracks, and it might be The Hollow that I'm thinking of. And like the song, I really love the songs, but there's something, and I get that from Emotive and Eat the Elephant, where for whatever reason, and I kind of appreciate it too, there's a quality of A Perfect Circle that can be very beautiful and lush, but there's also this kind of grotesque element to them.
That's why I use the term androgynous, to where when Maynard said, you know, it's like Tool's masculine, Perfect Circle's feminine, I'm like, no, A Perfect Circle is kind of this middle.
It lives in, and it kind of, I 100% agree. It's very, they kind of got into where they feel like they can do anything. And I think that gets them into trouble.
I agree. That was a very good point to make.
I don't think it can always, but I really appreciate it for that. And just because I know I'm not going to mention it that much once we're done and getting into the categories, for sure, I listened to Murder Noms, and in my head, I was thinking, this is where my most overrated song is going to be. It's going to be Judith or Three Libras, because those are the two I know everyone talks about. Yeah. I listened to both of them, and I went, they are properly rated. They're both really good. Like, Three Libras is, like, lyrically, I think it's the best thing I've ever heard Maynard do.
I mean, obviously, I'm probably going to defer more towards Tool when it comes to something like that. But just the emotional quality, and it really was. It was just such a eye opener, to where at that moment I went like, okay, I appreciated what you did before, but for you to pull off a song like this that has that little string section arrangement, you know, and the You Don't See Me, that really hits.
It's so good.
Yeah, that's an emotional, like, everybody feels like, you know, unseen at times in their life. And that's why I think it's very impactful and done in, I think, in a very classy way.
Because think about it, like, how many times does that kind of song with, like, that big kind of open, what is that, a G shape, right, that he's finger picking, or it's like that kind of slides.
Honestly, for the most part with The Perfect Circle, I don't try to learn their songs. And the same kind of goes with Tool. I mean, I've learned obviously Tool songs and A Perfect Circle songs, but for the most part, I like to keep it a little more separated.
I like that. I appreciate that.
Yeah. I'm like, I don't need to sound like you guys. I want you guys to hold this sound down.
It's very syrupy though, right? And it's got the strings to it. Like, there's so many versions of Three Libras that bands have tried that do not go well, and the lyrics don't work, and it feels really sappy. Yeah. But the things that lyrically for me, when Maynard is not working, is when he's like diving into the thesaurus and he gets very pretentious in a way that he doesn't need to be.
I hate saying pretentious, too, because it aggravates me. That guy is when you watch an interview with him, he's a very thoughtful guy.
Yeah.
He's very thoughtful. He's very he's intelligent. He's not he's not an idiot. He is a little pompous. There's definitely that element to him. But when I hear certain lyrics, I'm going, you didn't try at all on this. You just like what you said, going into a thesaurus, and it's like, okay, what's Pneuma mean?
But when he says, like, here I am expecting too much of the wounded. Like, that is, it's a perfect way of, like, the words hit, they're perfect. And I know I'm, in this podcast, I keep talking about how the sound of words and the kind of words that you use and how they don't have to be overcomplicated, right? If they hit in a way that's perfect with the moment that the song is playing. And that's exactly what it is. It's so great. It's a wonder.
So. Yeah. And so, How do we want to do this? Do we want to discuss each album and then go into our categories, or should we?
I literally just want to talk about Married to Noms with you because I was afraid I wasn't going to get to.
And that's good. I'm glad that we did discuss it because that is an unsung. Well, I shouldn't say unsung. It's their second best album, and so I just feel like it doesn't get its love, you know. And
well, let's do this. Deserves it. I think so. Let's do this. We have our best song right now. Do we want to say it at the same time? Because I'm almost certain. If we don't have it, I'll be embarrassed.
Best song?
Best song. Okay, maybe not. Now I'm nervous. You go first, Rob.
I have this feeling that your best song is right before my best song, but I'm a little torn on best song because I've never thought of anything Maynard's done as song-based. So I really go off of the album, especially compared to other artists. It's like, those are experiences.
Let me say this thing, because this is where the superlatives for me start. In my opinion, the best song that band has ever done is Weak and Powerless.
Yeah. Okay. So my prediction is correct as well with this.
And it is, when I say that I think it is a perfect song, I mean, literally everything about that song, when I listen to it, every instrument, every like second of it is so like perfectly orchestrated to me. I know I've said this to you many times. It is for me the best like modern rock radio song. Yeah. Like it was like a hit ever.
And it has such a dysfunction for being a hit. Like it doesn't follow the norms of a hit song.
100%.
You know, and that's a great song. And apparently the drums were the last thing that really fell in line. The percussion was the most difficult part, according to I've deep dived.
Josh Freese?
According to Billy Howard.
We also
have to, you know, we have to hold him accountable for the great and the poor.
I like the way you phrase it. We have to hold him accountable. But I mean, and that track, his guitars are fantastic. Oh,
great. And he plays a big role in, you know, the bass and everything. But Josh Freese found it. And I will dive into Josh Freese a lot more later on in this.
Oh, my God. Well,
he's a make or break when it comes to this band.
He's the special, like, I feel like I've said this before with bands where like, what's the special sauce? Mm-hmm. He, to me, is the special sauce.
Yeah,
because when he's not there, the arrangements get way less interesting. And Weak and Powerless, like the way like that, like that, like constant. That's the kick,
the constant.
Right?
Even that little do 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 ka do ka ka. His approach of it. That's, you got to be really imaginative when it comes to that song.
He never plays.
You're kind of doing a straightforward, but you have to add some flair without taking over that song. That's one. What's the term I always like to use when it comes to writing? That's a delicate song.
I love that word because it is, and yet there's such a propulsion to it, and it's constantly driving. And what's so great about that is if that was just it, and then Maynard was singing about something else, it would just be a good song. Yeah. But everything is working in one direction, and that's like that record. I think it's very similar, but there's this driving rhythm to it. Mm-hmm. Everything feels so desperate, right?
And the rhythmic propulsion of the bass and the guitar, like there's, because it's within that beating drum that there's just that solid, and then you add that long boom and boom 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 to where it's just a nice, just the dance that all the instruments are having together. And then Maynard's, his lyrics are really good on that song.
That I got to call attention to, like, allow me, everyone, please, just a little bit of lyric diving here.
Of course.
This is in that second verse. And it's so, another thing I love about the song is how brief it is, that it doesn't overstay its welcome. Mm-hmm. Right after, I think the song that you are going to say is your favorite, which I really love as well. It's so different. Mm-hmm. I think, someone feed the monkey while I dig in search of China. Why it is Dracula as I approach the bottom. When you listen, like on the page, it's not super great, right?
It's got a little bit of like, okay, you're using bizarre little tropes in there, but.
And yet it's that he uses so many and he mixes them. So someone feed the monkey on your back, right?
Mm-hmm.
Feed also, right? Which is all just about, it's all about obsession. Yeah. While I dig. I keep thinking of Randy Travis, Deep in the Hole, right? But just digging a hole for yourself in search of China, cocaine, right?
Yeah.
White, deepness, white as Dracula, white mix. So like they're all starting to mix again. Dracula, blood sucking, approach the bottom. Like he's combined like 5-6 different metaphors for obsession in one. It feels messy. And yet because of the song and how frantic everything feels in that second verse, it's every time I listen to it, listeners, I get like a little heart flutter. That's why cool. I love like the binding of lyric. Like, I know I'm a lyric guy, but that's the, ooh, it's perfect.
Well, and with that song, with the vocal melody, with how long he holds out so weak and powerless, how he holds them out and he kind of differentiates them.
Yeah.
I've always found that to be such a cool.
I never get it right.
Yeah. At one point in time, I had it completely down, but you know, I had to branch off, Maynard. All right, it had nothing to do with your last two albums. It just had to do with personal.
I want to hear yours now because I actually could talk way more about that song. But yeah, I want to hear what yours is.
Yeah, this was such a difficult category. It really was. The idea of best song, like I said, I just had this mental makeup when it comes to Maynard. I'm never judging it off of a song. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm judging it off of an entire album and what the album is speaking towards, because it's usually thematic. You know, there's no album by him that, like, oh yeah, it was just scattered songs about, you know, whatever. But the noose, just, I feel like that would be the song that I would see. And now I'm already second guessing it. I've never dedicated on this subject or on this category.
Is there a second place to you that or close first?
It's more, I'm trying to think of what when I think of best song, I always try to think what encapsulates this band.
Okay.
You know, to where the news is probably just for me. I should just go with, like, that's probably my most listened to song by them.
It's very, very good.
Yeah. And it's the way that song builds upon itself is just such a good vibe. And most of the time, like I was saying in the last episode, I got headphones in. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm outside and it, like on a rainy night, that song and maybe, I don't know, some form of inebriation. Mm-hmm. It's kind of nice standing out there and letting that song just come through. Because, I mean, you don't even expect when those drums pick up. And not even pick up, but become crisper.
Yeah.
Oh, it hits. And you know, that song, that's another song where I think there's a lot of that, you know, but I'm more than just a little curious how you're planning to make your amends to the dead. Oh man, like, I have a lot of dead people that it's like, yeah, dude, that I can see the weight of those words. And I just feel it's almost that moment where you relate to the singer.
Yeah.
You know, and that sounds a little glorifying Maynard, but that's something I love with any band. You know?
No, and for that record, I think
you almost said it.
It's going to be hard for, I think, both of us with the record. I think we're both going to say is the best one.
Let's just get it out of the way.
Yeah, it's the 13th step.
It's 13th step.
I want that vinyl. My co-host Rob is holding up his vinyl version of 13th step.
I'm all about the visual bits that you don't get to see, everybody.
It's good.
but yeah,
For your album that's about addiction, and I think both of us, right, have like histories of like people that we love or know that have gone into those kinds of bouts. Yeah. And it's, that record can be kind of devastating.
Oh, right, man.
For those moments.
Yeah. There's so many just introspective moments that and I love when artists can do that to you. I love it. There's such a, like, have you talked to people to where when they're in a bad mood, they want to listen to a good happy song? I'm the complete opposite. When I'm in a bad mood or if I'm in a dark place, I want to hear a dark song that kind of commiserates with me.
It's weird, right? Because I feel the same. It's like if you're in different stages of it, like, mm-hmm. I just want to, like, there's definitely my list of just like Oblivion songs where it's like, let me just dive into the abyss and hear what like the worst of my fears sound like.
Yeah, that's exactly what this album kind of, and on top of that, just the ebb and flow of it is incredible.
It's masterful.
Yeah.
I don't know other word. And just keep talking about your track Noose, because I can tell you it was the package, the Noose.
The package was the package was an honorable mention within there.
Is that one of the best first three tracks to a record?
Oh, without a doubt. But you know what? Here's the thing: is it still keeps going? Because I can think of, like, there's a song by or there's an album by Jeremy Enoch that I think it's called OK Bear, where the first three songs I adore. The rest of the album just doesn't live up to what that presents.
Yeah.
No offense, Jeremy Enix, you're probably not listening. But
but back to what you were saying about what you think of as the best song, that those three encapsulate the record so perfectly. It's like they're teaching us about how to listen to the record.
Yeah.
And everything that comes after. Like there's no, I've heard arguments to the contrary, but there are no weak points to that album.
No, me. I mean, even
anything.
Yeah. Even if you, let me take a look at the track listing, just get a, I mean, you could argue that Vanishing is, and that's apparently more from the Mir Danam's stage. Apparently a Billy Howardell wasn't able to find it in his computer amongst his files. So that never, and so eventually he found it. I can't remember what he titled it, but he titled something so weird that he couldn't find it. So it never got mentioned on that, and not much was changed on that song. And just in fact, the joke of Vanishing, like disappear, is related to the fact that couldn't find the damn song. It just disappeared.
Oh.
But now I don't think that takes away from the value of the song, you know?
Oh, I think it's great.
Yeah. But I would say that that's probably a song. I think, okay, I'll save it for, but there's certain songs on here that I guess I can see how somebody might want to make an argument that that's a, you know, a falling off point from this beginning to end great record. They're wrong.
I agree with you.
Beginning to end, it's a great, great record.
And that's the way you got to listen to it. And the news, when I think about the arrangement and the drums, like you were saying, that they stop, right?
That drum beat is incredible. Yeah.
That little hesitation. No one does that. Like, that's like any other drummer that you put in there.
Josh
Freese is so great at those kinds of things.
Yeah. And to take a couple of steps back in our conversation, when you were asking, like, when it all of a sudden A Perfect Circle comes out, the first thought I had was, I'm like, who the hell are they going to get that's going to live up to Danny Carey from Tool? Because that's my favorite drummer of all time. His ability level is scary good. And it's also not necessarily, it's bragging, but while fitting into a song, you know?
Right.
And Josh Freese seamlessly dove right into that role. Is like, oh yeah, I know who Danny Carey is. I'm Josh Freese.
Yeah,
this will go fine.
And I've always been like a single kick, and like I know Josh Freese does others as well, but I think he's just really versatile. And do you know he's been? I looked him up on like 400 records.
He's been in so many bands, The spectrum, or the vastness of how many bands he's been in is just.
I forgot he played drums on Weezer.
Yeah.
Was it the Red Album?
I think it was on the Red Album. I want to be able to say for sure. I don't want to say without knowing. But I know he was with The Offspring. He was with The Replacements. He was with, what is it? Is it The Vandals?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Vandals.
Yeah. And so, I mean, he's probably the best studio drummer out there. And he would love to be probably in that little basement. That's like, I'll just walk around and go like, you need a drummer?
Me. Yeah. I'll happily welcome Josh Freese in the basement that I am captured in.
See where I don't want any part of that, because he's going to show up and I'm gonna be like, I'm still not done. I'm still kind of tweaking some things out. If you could come back in like, I don't know, a year.
We're talking about that three song suite.
Yeah.
Where is the package for you in like album openers that you're aware of? Because
it's up there.
That when it gets heavy, and before that, the song is amazing. Like, I'm so happy. If the song is the way it is, I'm so happy. And then when Maynard goes, give this to me, and it breaks in, that belongs in the loop. It is perfect.
The archives. Yeah.
Oh my God.
That's where they walk that fine line between this can just be a boring nu metal song or a boring cliche nu metal song, but they bring it toward, because there is something about this. Dun, 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 bum, bum, bam, and I know this is going to be a theme, everybody. I will just.
Just making music noises with their mouth. Yeah, we'd be doing this on the phone. So you have to bear with us. That's just how we talk.
Essentially, this podcast is a phone call with a
little... It really is. except it's not at 2 o'clock in the morning anymore.
Now yeah. And we're aware people are listening to us, but yeah, the formation of it all. And just the, like I said, it's the imaginative, the fact that they were able to kind of take a step away. I think most of those parts, I think, started like on the package when they hit that. It may have been this just like, dan, 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 dan. What should we do with that? You know, like, okay, we're going into this heavy part to where I feel like there was a conversation behind yeah. what occurred. And now maybe it just, it's either I'll take it to where they had a conversation or it just happened.
Yeah.
Which both are beautiful to me, but it's more of the fact that they didn't settle. There's no settling on this.
It feels so intentional. And mm-hmm. the listener who listened to maybe our episode on Vampire Weekend and was, I mean, I think you're already getting a sense that our music tastes are varied somewhat, but we definitely have things we look for. If there's yeah. a listener who was kind of like scoffing, like, oh, Perfect Circle, right? For whatever reason, for that like kind of new metal-y vibe, you might think you're, just listen to 13th Step and tell yeah. us that's not perfect. It's yeah. so
good. It's all there. If you don't like it, then you don't like power chords.
This is songwriting, right? We're yeah. all about songwriting. And this is the part where you just respect the craft of mm-hmm. like they made what is essentially is a concept record, right?
It but is
one that is done in a way I think that it should always be done.
Yeah.
Like thematic, playing off of these things, telling us a story about them, but also not like diving too far in a narrative where you want to just kind of Green Day.
Yeah. I mean, it's definitely a thinking man's album. You can't go into it and just, if you just want it to be, you know, background music, like, no, this is something you have to kind of immerse yourself in. 100%. Don't let it just flow over or just pass you by, you know, get involved with this album, interact with it.
Is there anything else you want to say nice about 13th Step before? Because that from this point on, my notes get very dark.
I found it to be an interesting note with the song The Outsider, which mm-hmm. is a great song. Cool, too.
Oh, I love it. Yeah.
Yeah. You know the music video for that? You remember that? I yeah. loved the music video.
I really didn't want to talk about this.
Well, no, but now we don't have to dive into that. It's not so much about that. It's more that when they were having people, you know, kind of come and pitch them an idea for the music video, yeah. Maynard finally just got so fed up to where he's just, nobody understands what the hell this song's about. Screw it. Let's get the Bikini Bandits out there and we'll just throw them into the video. And I've always struggled trying to, like, what do you mean? Like, nobody knows. It seems very obvious. Yeah. It's not that obvious. What would you say the song's about?
I feel like I'm going to be cheating because I think I was doing my own research. For the longest time, here's my connection with the song was very similar to Blue, right? Where it's the person mm-hmm. looking up from the outside looking in of addiction, which I think mm-hmm. even Maynard said is more or less what he is like. Yeah. He's never had an issue himself, but he's always had friends that were close to him.
Yeah.
And it's like the frustration that comes from like watching someone destroy themselves. And I think what I've learned is that it's, you can go ahead and just say it, right? It's like a critique of that point.
Yeah. It's basically him saying like, it's a somebody looking at a loved one and going, treating them like their addiction is equivalent to a sprained ankle.
Right. Right.
You know, whereas they're not having enough understanding. And all of a sudden that last part, you know, should your drama prove sincere, do it somewhere far away from here. Mm-hmm. No, it's all of a sudden I'm just like, oh, that wasn't him being insightful. And, you know, like from his holier than thou viewpoint, it's more him just like he's playing the character of somebody who's just like, I'm done with you. You can't handle this and you're not worthy. You know, it's yeah. so dismissive. And that was a cool thing to discover because I learned that over.
And the nuance, you're right, is it's just one of the things like you mentioned, where if you're listening to the record for like a heavy vibe or you're listening to it for background, you're going to enjoy yourself, I think, because the heavy mm-hmm. parts are great and the background yeah. parts are atmospheric.
Oh, pet when it goes into
yeah, a little extra chug.
Yeah.
But you're missing all of the stuff that makes the record so special.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, man. Okay.
All right. Let's Are we going into a category to
worst kinda... song? Yeah, let's do worst. Let's do it by category so that we have some. I need the categories because I'm okay. I'm upset. My worst song.
Thank you for starting two. It.
Right. I have to start it. There's I have to because I don't know how else to explain this. Emotive from Emotive, Annihilation. the arrangement that is, if we're doing like Oscar categories, worst arrangement, Annihilation. In every here's and this is somewhat personal. People whispering makes me nauseous. I hate the sound of people whispering, and the pops and the little snaps. Yeah. And Maynard whispering in my ear makes me like physically ill. But then on top of that, it's when we talked about pretentious, like pretentious in a way that makes me upset. Where that little like it is nothing about it is good to me. And when I listen to the Crucifix Annihilation song, I'm like, yeah, it's a good song. It's like, you know, anarcho punk, super heavy and fast.
You'll love this. Billy Howerdell admitted he had never heard that song.
I'm totally. That doesn't shock me, and it upsets me. It does seem that they put it.
I remember
and make people pay for it.
I remember the last phone call we had when we were kind of diving into that particular album. Plenty of the songs, including that one, I believe that was one of them, were never intended to be cover songs. They just kind of forced.
Then I have a good idea for them. Don't make them cover songs. But also, whatever song that was going to be was not going to be good either. if the excuse is, hey, it's just we were using our own music, like none of the music on that record. Okay, well, I'm not going to get. I'm getting upset.
Slow down. I understand. I went through some stages of grief when it came to the later stages of A Perfect Circle. I've made a lot of peace this last week with them.
So that is my worst arrangement. The worst song to me is Disillusioned off of Eat the Elephant.
Man, and this is where we have contrasting viewpoints because that's almost my favorite song off the album. But it's I can see why it's not a good song because it just. It never gets its footing.
Never gets its footing. And what it's actually talking about is like, it makes me want to buy an iPhone. Like, I don't own a smartphone, but I'm upset at the way that they're talking to people who have iPhones. We're like, it's trite, man. I love. And again, this is the same band that wrote 13th Step, which for people who at any moment have had addiction,
it's not the same band. It's the same two guys who are involved with 13th Step.
You know what? They're not going to escape this. They wrote a record where if you have anybody where addiction has impacted your life, 13th Step is like such a powerful thing, right?
It looks at addiction from every vantage point possible.
Yeah, nuance and complexity. And and this like the and I'm trying to be like polite here. The message of Disillusioned is hey, put your phone down and go outside. Like,
yeah,
don't write that song.
The effort is just not. This is where, see, I almost, again, I'm diving, when you talk about the song Disillusion, I start thinking about the album Eat the Elephant.
I think it's symptomatic, right?
Yeah, for sure. But I also found it fascinating that, you know, it's time to put the Silicon Obsession down, take a look around, most of that album was made via the internet. Those two guys are not in the same space. I was like, dude, you need this Silicon Obsession to complete the album.
Yeah.
Most of it was Billy Howerdell sending you, according to their notes and their commentary on how it was created. Yeah. Most of it was you guys were sending your ideas back and forth in completely separate locations. I imagine it wasn't by pigeon.
maybe go outside and talk. And the thing, just to like riff a little bit here, like when I looked up that song and reactions to it, like if you go to Wikipedia, it's like critics have analyzed the lyric "Put the silicone down" as potentially having to do with cell phones. I'm like, so who? What are we
potentially
doing here, people? Potentially,
yeah.
It is. Come on, people.
Yeah. What is it? Don't let go of that boob. Like,
it's obvious. Yeah, it's like, what else are we talking about? And what upsets me then is Maynard is writing that verse, right? And he says, okay, this is what I want to say, but I can't say what I want to say. So what do? I try to go an extra layer of abstraction than mm-hmm. cell phone. I can't say, put the cell phone down. You can.
It would have been. If you think, I think I might have liked it more.
Would have worked. And you know what? And if that doesn't work, then don't write the song. Like, that's in my head.
Yeah.
Like, when I'm going to try to say something, and if the thing I want to say doesn't work and it's bare level, then I start to reassess whether or not the song is worth it.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's, and Maynard's a better songwriter than me. I get that. But I haven't written Disillusioned.
I would love to see what Maynard comes up with an acoustic guitar in his hand. No offense, Maynard, but I've never gotten the impression that I have heard apparently that he'll sit down with like piano ideas, but
yeah,
he's admitted that he's more of a responsive songwriter.
That's my take. I am going back to deep breathing now. I'm ready. Rob, tell me, what's your worst song?
Oh man. I'll just go with Talk Talk.
I knew you were just kind of looking through the track list and going, what do I want to choose?
Yeah, I mean, I can go Talk Talk. There are a couple of moments on Emotive, but Talk Talk is his idea is, it's so there. But when I hear those, like, walk like, if when you talk like Jesus, try walking like Jesus, Maynard, dude. Younger you is so, your younger you could not listen to this. This is insufferable. I mean, I could also make the same statement for I can't remember the name of it. It's the Thank You for the Fish. What is it?
Oh, yeah, that's it. Hitchhiker.
So Long and Thanks for All the Fish. And there's some depth actually on that album behind the reasoning behind the song. But I'm like, how am I supposed to enjoy this? It is such a weird, I don't even know what genre to call it, but
it's almost like Talking Heads-ish. I don't know. Like, I was trying to think of, there's like bands that I can hear them aspiring to.
There's a little bit of that We Didn't Start the Fire vibe to it. And I can appreciate the ambition, and, you know, Maynard said, well, actually, I got to save this opinion, but worst song, I'm a broken record on this, but I listen to records when it comes to them, so that's where I'm just like, the worst song is on two albums, take your pick.
Like, we could, yeah, to be honest, we could have closed our eyes and put a finger down,
yeah, throw a dart, and the odds of me landing on one that I actually do like is pretty slim.
I think that is
embellishing. I do like songs on both those albums.
Me too.
But,
well, on one,
there you go. But but in general, yeah, just, you know,
I think what you just mentioned that I agree with is the worst songs in Eat the Elephant are the ones where they have written songs with the same goals and concepts. Mm-hmm. And so it's like when you listen to Talk Talk and you listen to Judith, you're like, how are you not getting this?
Yeah, it's like, can we put the Jesus references aside for God's sakes, man?
Yeah.
Use that in your next album, Maynard.
We're gonna dip into positivity again. I think we need this. It's good for us. What is your most underrated song?
Oh man, I do have a definitive answer for this, but I just think any passionate A Perfect Circle fan is about to roll their eyes or let out the most amazing groan. Imagine. Or they'll turn away from the camera and they'll look in different directions and just have a look of shock in their face.
I wish we had a video for just that moment. Because in my head, I was like, you have to be so careful, Colton. You're going to anger so many people.
And dude, think about it. I love John Lennon. Yeah. They didn't get anywhere close to how great Imagine is. But the amount of backlash that I perceive them to get for the song Imagine, I'm going, listen to the music. I think it's one of those possible songs to where, actually, no, I'm pretty sure that they did do all of that on purpose. That wasn't, we had this music and Maynard come in and we decided it's going to be a cover, sing it this way. But I think the musical composition is great. I think it's like the guitar that comes out of the I vibe to it when I didn't like it before. But this again, so I think I may have put myself in this mind setting to where I've listened too much to it, to where I'm starting to just accept it's. I went through the seven stages of grief with I'm at acceptance. Yeah, but that's
they locked you in that basement for too long, man.
That's right. But that one, I like that song. I actually think they did a good job for such a daunting. That is a song that's really difficult to go in and say, we're going to do this completely different.
Yeah.
And I think that they executed really well. I think that they stuck within their vein and they were a little under the gun with the time restraints to making that album with their own self-inflicted time restraints.
Right.
But I think the execution on the song is solid, and they still had Josh Freese.
And that's
and actually Paz, the bass player from Mare de Noms, she's actually part of the string arrangements on it.
She did a lot of strings. I know she did strings on, I believe she did the strings in my underrated song. And I'll go ahead and say yours is better than mine. Because yours I could see as being underrated, because I think I underrated that song and you talked me into it. Like,
give it another shot. Give it another next episode, Colton. Come back and either let me have it or go like, you know what? It wasn't as shitty as I originally planned. There's some merit in there, but
put a pin in this and we'll see, everyone. Mine is Gravity.
Oh, the last track. She did do strings on that.
And I don't really think the song gets a lot of hate necessarily, but I think when I re-listen to that album again and thinking of all the songs that make that album special to me, I didn't give enough. This is maybe my underrated.
I think we've used the term before. It's not so much it's underrated, it's underappreciated.
I think that's a good way of putting it. And Gravity to me is such a perfect closer, and conceptually. So if you're unfamiliar, anyone with AA, right? And what's weird is I know a lot about AA philosophy because I've done papers on David Foster Wallace, who wrote a lot about AA.
Rest in peace.
Rest in peace. David
I'm Foster still Wallace. Never going to read Infinite Jest. That is just, that's.
This is like a weird thing to dive in, but I'm on, there's a Cambridge University Press book on David Foster Wallace that I have a chapter in. So if you feel like dropping $100 on a textbook, go ahead, guys.
I wanted to read it until you.
Give it to you for free.
There you go. Okay. Yeah. Why don't you put a cost on it? Yeah.
I have a Word doc. Anywho, one of the things that, and from people I know who've been through the program talking about it, it's about like recognizing that your best decision making got you to the place you're in. Mm-hmm. Right. And so it's this idea of giving yourself to a higher power. And it's because I think the question I always would ask is it about religion? And they said, not really. It's about recognizing that. You have to relinquish some control, right?
Yeah.
Over your life. And I know I'm not getting it right for people who are more familiar with this, but it is about that idea of relinquishing some of that, recognizing that you and your best mindset made the decisions that got you to where you are in your life. And I think given that and knowing that the concept of the record is about addiction, it's such a perfect way of expressing it. And the music is such a perfect way of actualizing the song is, right?
Yeah, the overall I don't know if you call it a groove, there's this place and even they do something in that song to where I always think I'm gonna roll my eyes, but when right before the last chorus when they do that dun dun I am I always think I'm just like, this part's not as good as I think, right? And it's like one of the more simple rhythmic choices that they make, and it works so well. It's still just how it comes out of that. It hits just right.
Bands before, I think, have tried to write in like an elemental mode. So I don't want to like spend too much time spitting venom at other people, but Thrice, I know, did like their element records, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of those to me have been hit or miss, but the idea of gravity and it being air and light, that there's a heaviness to that, like pressure of gravity, that like the bass, the rhythm section, it's like, and like that is hard. Like listeners, I think some of you will know this. It's so hard.
The subtlety behind that song in particular, but we can just say that entire album, the subtleties, that's really where the magic's at.
And I think that's the one. I could be mistaken, but I remember when I was younger, there was like a Modern Drummer article on Josh Freese. It's one of the first times I started to really get into him. And they were talking about that record. And I believe that's the track where he's playing 16ths. And so it's like 1-8, 2-8, like that kind of faster. For people who aren't familiar.
Let's break it down. So these are quarter notes, right?
Yeah. Musical theory with Rob. You would have to teach that, not me. But he's playing 16ths, but on the ride and the hi-hat. And that gives it that kind of like... It's ringing, but it has that kind of flatness of the hi-hat too.
And just to kind of touch upon what you were saying before, when you were saying that you've never had an addiction and that song, you could just kind of get a vibe from... Think of who wrote the lyrics to it. Somebody who's never had an addiction. So it makes it that much more special, I think, that it was able to be executed so flawlessly, at least our perceptions.
I agree. Like, again, the superlatives for that record to me just don't... I think as of the bands we've covered, it's the top in terms of...
Like, I think that's the best record. Records, yeah, out of like, all of them. And Black Mile to the Surface would be right there for me. Father of the Bride would probably be third on that for me.
It's Pinkerton right before, but...
Oh, and Pinkerton. Yeah, that's right. But
13th Step is... It's pretty easily for me right now. It's got the belt.
Yeah, I think that's the one where, what is it, Rolling Stones? That's a 4.5 out of 5 stars, if not 5 stars out of 5 stars.
That's... Yeah. Well, for Rolling Stone, you have to be 70 years old to get 5 stars.
Well, and you got to wait 70 years before they get it right.
Yeah. I threw trash at Rolling Stone, everyone. Here we go.
That's right.
Overrated.
And they're listening.
Overrated song. I'll just go ahead and say Passive for me. Didn't even know until, again, I was like diving into just trying to get a feel for like how people talk about A Perfect Circle. Because I don't do that. I don't use the internet to talk about music, which is strange, right? I know people do, like, I'll talk about literature. I'm on like the horror subreddit, horror literature, right? Which is a lot of fun. But I don't really do to talk about music. And when I hear people talk about Perfect Circle, there's such a deep emotional resonance with Passive, which, by the way, for people who, the songs that I'm trashing or Rob, like, that you have like an emotional link to, like, just know, I mean, I know that we both have those kinds of connections with records that other people probably just don't like. That's the kind of the beautiful thing, right?
Well, yeah, no matter what, there's no right or wrong here. It's all subjective, you know, we're just...
Except for Annihilation. There's no point in that. But what I'm trying to say is Passive. I know there's a lot of deep emotional resonance to that for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. But to me, it is a bland song. Like, even now, I've listened to it like 4 different times. And I feel like every time I need to re-listen to it because it just kind of, it's flat.
I actually do see where you're coming from on that, because it's, first of all, that wasn't really in A Perfect Circle song. That's something from a Trent Reznor project. That's what I'm trying to look up right now. That just fell flat on its face, that Maynard was kind of part of. And then they played it live for a little while, and then they finally went and made a studio version. So I think that might be the reason that it's so maybe not reaching its full potential.
Don't you just think the more we talk about that record, don't we think at some point they should have been like, hey, either we don't release this because it's like a bunch of songs that just didn't have a place anywhere. And like, yes, there's B-sides collections, but let's not release it as like a full-scale record. Like it was, like, even like when I asked, I was like, hey, Rob, are we going to do Emotive? And we both agreed, yeah, I guess we should. The problem is, like, it's not like a B-sides collection. It's not framed as like it's like, hey, this is A Perfect Circle record.
It is treated as a record to where I initially was going to say, because I think actually Passive for me was going to end up being a an underrated, just because I liked it, and I like that he does a little. It's very rare for Maynard to do that kind of a soul singer.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know where he does that. Turn and face me.
Your head bobs are.
I'm doing the Christina Aguilera, like holding your hand up. But it has to be considered. I wasn't going to consider it, but then just the more that you look at A Perfect Circle as four studio albums, that's where it has to be considered.
Yeah, I agree. So we are we at worst album?
I believe so.
I think that's it. I think this is our final bit. And you're probably, listener and Rob, guessing which mine would be. It's Emotive for me. Mm-hmm. And I think I've already said enough. I won't say, here's the last thing I want to say about Emotive.
Yeah, go ahead.
It was so difficult for me to listen to that record because I was getting, it was upsetting. Upsetting in a way of like, hearing that these were mainly just the Perfect Circle songs that they were putting these lyrics in.
Not all, but plenty.
A good amount of them, right? And
could be one.
My own distaste for cover albums overall is pretty high. Like, it's up there with holiday records. By the way, bands, just stop doing holiday records. Just stop it. Or here's,
you know, I didn't fully grasp what you were saying before when you were saying holiday. I think on the last one, I was thinking like out on a vacation. That's what you were saying, right?
That's what I was thinking. Yes.
Okay. But now when you say it, I'm going like, oh, and you could also think like a Christmas album.
Oh, it's like, you know, Weezer sings Christmas carols or Bright Eyes. That's the other one that I don't like.
Yeah, once a year.
Bright Eyes.
Yeah, we will get to them, but that may be where we start compartmentalizing the entire catalog.
We're gonna have to.
Yeah.
Anywho, yeah. And the only other thing is, it reminds me. Do you remember the What's Going On that came out after 9/11 with like all those?
Oh, made, like, the MTV. Yes. Yeah, like a Gwen Stefani, Bono. And
Fred Durst had the best. They were like, somebody tell me what's going on. We got human beings, even him a big for bombs.
I want to listen to it right now. Let's talk more about that so we can include that into this podcast.
Yeah, that song's bananas. And if you've never heard that, listener, go listen to, and they put out different versions of it, right? Because they had so many different ones.
And that was such a terrible time for mainstream music. Not that there's always bad stretches for mainstream music, but that was one where
it's like, yeah, you listen to it and you're like, this was it. This was the top of the top. And it's got it's got, what is his name from Stain? Is it Aaron Lewis? Is that his name?
We got to find a way.
I know who you're talking about, but I think you're right. I can't remember his name either, but yeah.
Bring some loving here today.
It's bananas.
It's bananas. Yeah.
But the whole reason bringing it up is that level of political engagement. That's what reminds me of Emotive, like that it's framed as an anti-war record, and
it was intentionally rushed to get out before the 2004 election.
But I just feel like that is, how do I put this? Like, it's so bad. And it's, to me, not like the best thing you could have done if that was the purpose is so a lot of those are good songs, right? Mm-hmm. I just the disconnect is there for me. Like, I don't see it as a like an actual anti-war statement. I see it as it's empty. I think it's the worst thing I can say about it. It feels empty.
I think Maynard's intentions from, again, just reading interviews, his intentions were more to try to motivate people to get a little more politically active. And he swears up and down that it's not anti-Bush and it's not particularly anti-war. It's supposed to be motivating. But this is, again, a moment where I think Maynard is trying to swindle us. It's like he doesn't want us to actually know what his intentions are. He's trying to keep it to where it's like, well, this is my little thing. You guys didn't understand what I was getting at. And that's where it gets a little insulting, I think, is more the word for that album to me.
Here's the best part. It's once we're done with this episode, I never have to listen to that record again. And that is, no. I might listen to Eat the Elephant, but I will never listen to Emotive.
I'll listen to this nonstop.
Yeah, he's holding up 13 Steps, everybody.
Another visual bit. But
tell me, okay, I got my demons out. What is your worst record, Rob?
Eat the Elephant freaking pissed me off. Like, I can't, I'm not joking. I went through 7 stages of grief. I've accepted it now, but that album, when it came out, like I said earlier, 14 fucking years. and it's not like I was anticipating it. I had assumed. I'm like, okay, it ran its path. Emotive is clearly my least favorite album by them, but they got 2 out of 3. Nailed it. You're good. And then all of a sudden, you know, word gets swirling. They're coming out with another album. And then that, I think, even took like 5 years.
Yeah.
I think like after they said they're going to make a new album, that took a long stretch of time. And for that to be it, and I feel bad because like the opening to that album, it feels
eat
like
Eat the Elephant, right?
Yeah, Eat the Elephant. It feels like that's almost Maynard. To me, it feels like it's him expressing his nerves about doing this again.
Yeah. Which is a bad omen.
Which is a bad omen.
But that song.
But, you know, Billy Howerdell talked about on the album, he was dealing with a few close friends of his dying. You know who he was originally going to give the song Eat the Elephant to?
Who's that?
Linkin Park.
Oh, Chester.
Chester Bennington was somebody who he had a good friendship with. And as we all know, Chester went out at his own hands.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and it's unfortunate. And what's really sad is, no offense to any Linkin Park fans out there, Linkin Park is not great. I will just subtly say it that way.
I think that was very diplomatically said, and yeah. I think we can all move on, and I agree with you.
I don't know who I would have rather sing the first song, because it's like it's delicate, and I feel like I appreciate it more now than I ever thought I would have, because I really did. I was so mad at this album.
Yeah.
That when I listened to it for the first time preparing for this podcast, I'm walking around at work, and the amount of times that I rolled my eyes, groaned out loud. And there were just moments where I'm like, what are you doing? What happened?
It's really, I think the best word I can say is it's just kind of, it's wonky. I don't know. It's like a weird, askew kind of record, and not in a good way that keeps you on your toes, in a way where, like you said, you're always kind of scratching your head like, why'd you do that?
Yeah. What was the amount of times that Maynard's voice, I'm going, this sounds comical. Your voice doesn't sound like what? I don't know. And I do get a little pissed off.
You're really upset. This is funny. I love this.
I
don't think I've ever seen Rob this bad.
Man, when it was going to be Tool and A Perfect Circle, Maynard said he tried to treat his frontman approach as two separate characters. And now it's all just merged into Pucifer or whatever, to where it's like on Fear Inoculum, on Eat the Elephant, he didn't have separation anymore. He just went like, I'm going to do the voice that I do all the time on Pucifer. And it's just like, well, give me some of the, it's so hard to express it. Cause
I love, this is great. This is what I was hoping for all week. I was like, I want Rob to really exercise some things.
I was really trying to avoid it, but I think I just feel bad. Like I said, the opener to this album, it seems like Maynard was a little nervous. When I was going like, where's that confident Maynard? I don't hear it on both those albums. I hear hesitant. I hear reserved. I hear afraid of actually being criticized. Like,
can I defend Fear Inoculum as the new flag bearer of Fear Inoculum as a good record? Is when I hear that opening track, like I hear like vocally, I don't know if I can dive into as deep as you are because you're just way more versed than I am. But the thing of that track and what I think Tool does, from what I've heard that I really enjoy, is the layers that they provide for these like longer songs, right? Long songs, for me, it really has to be about the way that the music is, it's deep enough where it can repeat, right? Yeah. And that you can dive into it and not feel bored or restless. And I think that Tool, at what you might say is their worst, I still think they do that really well. When I listen to Eat the Elephant, that opening track, it's, I mean, these are the same people who put together The Noose. Right, where that masterful arrangement, it's really bland in that song.
And they left out so many people on Eat the Elephant. That album doesn't have the band. most of that album is Maynard, Billy Howerdell, and the producer, and like a couple of little flashes of different drummers coming in. None of them Josh Freese, where you're instantly fucking up. Yeah. Like, how on earth, after 14 years, you couldn't drag him in?
What
you
was know he why? Doing?
He probably was going like, our last album was Emotive. I don't want to do that again.
They showed him. They're like, hey, these are our ideas. Dude, here's, do you think, this is something I wonder, like when like bands are like composing things and there isn't like an actual drummer in the room. Like, don't you think that kind of dooms records? Like, if you're like a rock band specifically, right, and you're trying to put a record together and you're writing songs and you don't have like a percussive like vision in your head, mm-hmm. like I can sometimes hear that in different bands, yeah. where like they're just like, and the beat will be there, and
yeah,
I don't know, it's lesser for it. And Eat the Elephant, that verbal, it's all just, he's just talking about eating the elephant. Like every lyric is just,
oh, just and that. And him saying he swears up and down that it has nothing to do with a political viewpoint, but I'm not willing to tell you guys what it is. He refused to tell. Tori's just like, what are you doing, man? And that's also another issue, is I think Maynard became a lot more public. And I think I understand it. Like, they all in, again, this also fits into Tool, where it's like, right. the mystery has kind of been stripped from it. Mm. You know, to where it's either go full mysterious or go reasonably open heart, open, like hard on your sleeve. But it's, I don't know. I just think, I feel like I'm not getting everything out. I won't be able to get everything out on this album, because I don't want to insult the guys, because they did so many great things. So, I mean, obviously we haven't insulted them, but Eat the Elephant is, it's insulting.
It's bad, bad, not good. I think you're more than safe. And that's what I was saying before, where if I dive too deep into the internet and how people talk about it, like, I want everyone to just live their life as full and completely as they can. And the expression that I love is, I don't want to yuck anybody's yum.
Yeah. But
I hear people talk about Eat the Elephant and they go, it's a masterpiece. Like,
I'm
sad for that.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think just the last thing on last little bit, because I think I had like notes in my mind that are just kind of leaking out a little bit. Mm-hmm. They felt stuck there with the whole in the basement thing. Mm-hmm. You know, the Immortals or what?
Yeah.
It seems like they had to be there. Not that they wanted to be there. You know, they forced themselves into the album, whereas it feels like Myrdanam, 13th Step, they had to do, like, they wanted to do that. This was something they were so motivated by, where mm-hmm. it just seems a little pretentious on Eat the Elephant and Emotive, like, to where it's just like they forced themselves to, okay, we got to make it by election night.
Right.
Yeah.
I think the only reason Eat the Elephant was not my worst is because for me, I still hear things in that record that interest me. Like, I didn't get to talk about it, but The Doomed, I actually think that's a pretty good song. Like,
The Doomed? Yeah.
It's not great. It's not a good Perfect Circle song, but when I hear it and when I hear it, like, like that, like yeah. metal riff that kicks in, I'm like, the video is insufferable. Don't watch the video, people. The video is so upsetting because it's nothing. And what's great about the video, by the way, is you have like James Iha and Maynard and Billy Howerdell, and they're like very rock star-esque. And then I imagine the other guy is the drummer, and he looks just like us. He's just a schlub. Like, he's just a regular yeah. dude. He has no, and he's just like, he's just kind of staring at the camera and like a very like, hey, yeah, I'm also here.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's, overall, honestly, I don't hate any of their records. I just really, really let down by their last two.
I hate Emotive.
Yeah,
like, fair. Of all the records we've covered, I'm sorry, I got to say it one more time. I want to throw that record in the ocean and then watch the fish float up to the surface, because the record was in the water and poisoned them. And then I want to jump into the water and be poisoned with them.
You know, I've said this before, ladies and gentlemen. Colton is one of the nicest people I've ever known, but I've always known he has ways to really hit at the core of you. Like, he's holding those to where if you ever let him down, he can really insult you. That's how good he is at it. That was beautiful imagery, Colton. That was beautiful.
Okay. I need to, after this, seriously, I'm going to do like Wim Hof deep breathing, because I want to feel, I need to like feel back to balance. But I think it's time for rating. And I don't remember any of the ratings I've given from the past. I'm not even going to worry about it. But what I is? I want to hear yours first.
Well, I can remember the ratings. Weezer, you gave a 5. Manchester Orchestra, you gave a 6. And I'm Vampire amazed. Weekend, you gave an 8.
I'm amazed you remember this. So this is great. So what is your Perfect Circle rating?
Well, you don't want to know my ratings for the 3 previous bands.
What are your ratings? You're like so hurt. What are your ratings for the first all about 3 bands? You, man. It is. That's I'm what, like, yeah.
Weezer, I think I gave a 6. And then Manchester Orchestra, 7.5. And right. Vampire Weekend, a 7.
Okay.
Man, you go first on this one. I still need a moment.
It's very similar to my Weezer rating where I got to do
I hate that, too. And you're so right. You're so right.
Because, like, if it was literally just 13 Step, it's 10 out of 10. And if it was 13 Step Murder Noms, it's a 9 out of 10. Yeah. If it's all those records together, it is as close to a 5. I think it's like it a 5.5. It gets
really pulled down. Yeah.
It's got to be a 5.5.
I don't feel exactly the same, but at least it was better than Weezer, your rating. I'm not going to surrender to gravity on this one, and I'm going to give them a 7.5. Okay. That's how important and how meaningful those first two albums were to me and how much they helped me in life.
I think that's a very perfect, beautiful way to put it. And can I boost my score to 7.5 with you so I can be up there with you?
No, you're a dick.
Oh, no. I want to be up there in the light.
You can be at 7.4. I need to look down at you a little bit. I'm looking down my nose at you in true Maynard fashion.
So here's the thing. Listen, Rob and I always trade off on our next band. I realize that we haven't decided. So I would reveal to you. I feel like we've been kind of going back and forth.
I like this. Yeah.
Here is the band I think we should do next. Are you ready for this? Thursday.
Beautiful.
We're going to do Thursday, everyone. So if you haven't listened to Thursday, have a great, however long it is till you listen to our next episode and enjoy those records. I got to go look at a Lakers Warriors score now that I almost certain did not go well.
Let's look at it right now.
Let's end it
right here.
All right. Oh God.
I love that sound. I love that sound. Come on, baby.
Oh.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
Good fourth quarter. God, it was the first quarter, man. That first quarter they could not get back from. And the third quarter. Good Lord.
Damn, dude. Hell yes.
Anywho, listeners, this is the last episode of Lakers Rights.
Yep. The next episode is going to be a Lakers talk featuring me.
And so again, hit us up on our email, which is no.your.rights, WRITES.podcast@gmail.com.
Yep. Gmail it is. Wow.
Hit up our non-existent Instagram that Rob tells me exists.
I promise it's somewhere out there. I just got to find it.
And you know what? Be good to yourselves. Whatever thing you've been denying yourself, listener, you don't think you deserve it. You do deserve it. You're doing a great job and you deserve that thing. Give yourself a treat.
What the hell did this turn into?
Rob looks very upset. I'm way overcompensating for how negative I felt before.
Yeah, live with it, man. Just dive into it. Everybody have a wonderful week.
And you know what they say?
Have a wonderful 2 weeks.
If your rights are known, then you're in the right. So be right. That's the catchphrase.
I'm not even going to try this week. Have a good one, everybody.
I'm going to get it eventually. It's going to be perfect.